You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Needs more followers on Instagram.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm joined in a room filled, a virtual room, I should say, filled with some heroes, Greg Rosenthal. And this is a real treat, everybody. We have a new contributor on the show. He's a Connecticut native. He spent some time in England as a youth. He supports, get this, the Cleveland Browns. Everybody give it up for Mark Sessler. Make him feel at home. Mark Sessler, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the chance to come on and talk with you guys today. Means
How
a lot.
Are you, buddy?
I'm good.
Where you been? How you doing?
Well, I didn't mean to have this prolonged absence because there was a show that I was supposed to do somewhere in the middle of this wilderness, and I'd come home from a trip at the same time as my children, and one of my children got a terrible 24-hour bug, and I woke the next morning the day of a show and was felled physically. I mean, I had like heavy motion sickness, and then I said the minute I texted you guys saying, because I was then leaving again on my second vacation the next day, and I thought the minute I texted these guys and told them I legitimately am not feeling well, and I really wasn't, it's like no one is going to believe me. They're going to think that I'm basically just eradicating this one little work event in the middle of these 2 weeks off, but that was not the case. It was one of the worst days of my adulthood. I promise you that.
It's just a weird coincidence that these 24-hour bugs almost always hit right on the cusp of a vacation to extend it on the front end or the back end. It's coincidental.
How about that, Mark? There are some breadcrumbs pointing in that direction, but you say that's completely a coincidence over the years.
I don't know. You need to provide facts about over the years. I can comment only on the most recent occurrence. But had I come on, it would not have been a pleasant experience for me, for you, or anyone listening. So
how about
I think
this
I
for
was
a theory?
Doing this.
Because what? Certainly I would never besmirch you, Mark, and come after your integrity and say never. That Mark is faking illnesses to extend vacations. But is there a possibility that the body, Mark's mind willing to grind out a summer podcast in this little bubble of vacation time, but the body conspires to shut things down? It's voluntary.
I can't speak to that. I like the part of me that was conscious was hoping to do the show, but maybe there are deeper forces.
Well, we're glad to have you back. That's all that matters. Sessler's back. Rosenthal's here, steady as a rock. Rocks don't move. Stay right where they are.
What if the studio moves? Zeuser. Greg is stuck right where he is. We have to carry him with us.
The old Zeuser's here too. Tugboat here to pull things along towards training camp, which is coming up. It's about to open. A couple teams, Steelers and Cowboys. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, it's been a month. We haven't done a show all together since right before Tybee, or no, right after Tybee. That's only been 1 month. I mean, give us a break.
Yeah, I mean, so am I harping on the television show that Greg missed? That I was present for that, and I put in a you know, a yeoman's effort, if that's the term you want to use.
Speak to that, Greg.
Yeah, he's right. I mean, it just is funny. You know, it's funny to. I'm glad though, because you look great. I think we all needed it. Of course, we didn't mind at the time. But these shows, they move along. They're off season shows. I want to have the best mark, and you look fit. You look, you have a glow about you, and you're wearing like a beautiful Hawaiian type shirt that reminds me of one of our old bosses. That got swept out in a scandal from the NFL, but you know,
which you're one? Right. You got to be more specific.
Well, no, that gentleman, I don't like that he co-opted this type of fashion. Because right,
Andy
the
Reid
only
looks like an Andy Reid shirt.
Too.
It looks like an Andy
Reid
shirt.
It is.
He's
floral...
one of the greatest men we've met. So there you go.
Sure.
Yes, there's a floral component to Mark's button down, and he looks refreshed. We're ready to roll. We got a nice show coming up today. We're going to take a chance on ourselves and our ability to prognosticate in the National Football League today with some high stakes. We're going to... guarantee. I had two names in mind. I think we go around the horn twice, and that's like playing a little bit of Russian roulette, to be honest with you, because coming up later today, we will guarantee a player having the best season of his career at the risk of our own lives.
Whoa.
If we're not right, it's over, Johnny. How about that for steaks coming back from vacation, Sizzler?
Well, I mean, we came up with this segment about 18 minutes before the show, so it feels like we've, you know, maybe we could look back at a bit of a hasty decision if one of our players, you know, sprains a knee in week six and is out for...
On one hand, like, it's dark. On the other, if you told me, like, Colin Coward did this as a segment, I'm suddenly invested in that player throughout the season and a little more invested in Coward. So I think it's going to be effective, Dan, as like, you know, this is your idea, as a, like sort of a producing mind. This is how you lock people in for the next 7 months.
Right. You need stakes. Journey. And that's what we have. There are stakes. Our lives are on the line. So we'll come up with some names there and hope for the best. But before that, let's do some news, shall we?
I've never been able to know why. That, not just that, but anything else.
Thought that works better context-free. I'll never know why I effed that up. You know, it's been 25 years since the Cowboys have been in the Super Bowl, so Jerry Jones, it could go in any number of directions. I believe that's his relation. He was referring to his relationship with Jimmy Johnson.
It was, yeah.
The head coach who we won all those Super Bowls with in the 90s, but always interesting what's going on with Dallas, and we're going to get to that in a little bit. But let's start with some unfortunate injury news because Tom Pelissero of NFL Network reported, and this has been confirmed, that Cam Akers, the hyper-promising second-year running back for the Rams, has suffered a torn Achilles tendon while training. Really, there aren't too many injuries that are worse than that for a running back, a game that is driven on speed and explosiveness. An Achilles injury is really devastating. So he will be out for the year. And for Sean McVay and the Rams, Mark, this one really hurts because Akers looked like a guy who could potentially anchor that backfield in a big year, a transition year for the organization on offense with, of course, Matthew Stafford in town. Now they got to figure out what to do without Akers. Huge setback here.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could look at Cam Akers as someone that was a candidate to lead the league in rushing and fit really. He's in the mix, I would say. And, you know, that is a huge loss for them. Darrell Henderson, I like Darrell Henderson. I think if you go back and look, you know, he's obviously going to be the starter at this point. You go back and look what he did early in the year. Week two against Philadelphia, had a nice game. Week three, he exploded for 114 yards. That was a game where they did not have Malcolm Brown. They did not have Cam Akers. I thought he looked good in that game. I mean, he's had some up and down injury scenarios himself. I think he missed about four games. But the rest of the roster, I mean, Xavier Jones, he's undrafted. He has no NFL experience, but they're saying that he may have a bigger role. I like this guy, Jake Funk, and I just want to let you know that, yesterday I was digging a little bit into the seventh rounder, Jake Funk, and none other than Spice Rack wrote me to say that he is, in quotes, very bullish on his ability to stick in the league, and that he was in a group of football fans and gamblers who said that Jake Funk caught their eye and kept impressing. So a little bit of a wild card man crush scenario. But I think that the other news is like they're not going to go re-sign Todd
Gurley. Wait a
second,
it's been a little while. You know, before you get to the second point, that you've had like a crush on a white running back. Oh wait, no, it's every year. You always
that is, it's not exclusive it's to
the,
that.
It's
subset,
called the Toby Gerhart Memorial Mark Sessler love affair.
It's fair. I mean, you guys continue to track past actions here with no with very little documentation, but that one seems accurate. But I'll pass it off to you, Greg. But no Todd Gurley going back to L.A.
Oh yeah, I saw when like Eric Dickerson. It was like, they got to sign Todd Gurley.
Eric Dickerson, you are one of the greats of your era. Can you just pipe down a little bit? Every time I see Eric Dickerson in the news, it's him telling people the way things should be. The Rams uniform should be this way. The Rams should be doing this. The Rams should be doing that. The Rams shouldn't have done this, but they should have done this. Hey, Eric, pipe down, bud. You got to have other adventures going on. You're one of the great running backs in the league history. Just take it easy. Go ahead.
He likes getting the pop. Them coming back to L.A. was big for him, and they definitely like use him a lot. He seems like – I feel like I've never been to a Rams game and not seen him around, so that's good. That when people threw that out, I was like, oh, I don't think they realize how – well, first, just how that ended. Like, there was no way the Rams were remotely interested, I don't think, in bringing Todd Gurley back. We'll see if he gets a job. They said they're not going to bring in a veteran, which, you know, makes sense right now because what's the rush? You get a look at your boy Funk, get a look at Xavier Jones, who was a guy who was on their roster last year who got no run, but at least they've talked up. But Henderson is a guy who's so fast and explosive, but like does not try to avoid tackles in any way, that he seems like destined to be hurt, and he has been hurt this offseason, and McVay's gone out of his way to almost always call him a change of pace, sort of immediately putting him in that role that like we want him to be the explosive guy off the bench. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do bring in a guy like Duke Johnson at some point. I'm surprised he's out there. Adrian Peterson, I don't know, but they'll look at the young guys first.
Remember CJ Anderson a couple of years ago, we were at a playoff game where he was the hammer against the Cowboys in a win. Someone tweeted at him, he's a free agent right now. I don't know what CJ Anderson
right.
looks
and people
like
bring
or
that
he's
up and
to.
They're like, look, they were fine when Todd Gurley went out. It's like, yeah, they were fine until they got totally stuffed in the NFC Championship and then got stuffed even worse in the Super Bowl. So it's like this running game hasn't been great relatively. It had a little up note last year towards the end especially, but the offensive line, like, you know, they believe in their offensive line, but on paper, it doesn't look great.
CJ said, nah, brah, I'm good. So it looks like his football days are behind him. We just talked about this on Monday's show, that there were some notable names out there on the veteran market. Le'Veon Bell, Adrian Peterson, who we talked about more in depth on Monday, Duke Johnson, all out there. But we'll see. The Rams might think they're okay now, but we'll see where they are in week one. I mean, got a long way to go still. In other news, 49ers are doing business with Fred Warner. That seems like a good idea. He signs an extension valued at over $95 million, almost $41 million of that guaranteed. He passes Bobby Wagner at nearly $20 million, $19 million as the highest paid per year linebacker in football. And that's a huge lockdown for the Niners. Greg, you know, this salary cap thing is always tough to kind of figure out. And it keeps on going up, and it will continue to go up, COVID-19 related issues notwithstanding. But the Niners have a lot of money tied up with star players, and you wonder if that's going to cash drop them down the line. But for now, you lock up one of the best players in football on the defensive side.
Yeah, most
of the
deals, they like get pretty flexible after 2 years, you know, including this one. And Warner's obviously worth it. I think he was the best middle linebacker in football last year. I mean, he was that good. And it became sort of a trendy thing to de-emphasize off-ball linebackers. You know, Warner plays middle linebacker, and they somewhat fit into this. But, like, a lot of teams just, they don't spend any money. They don't care about off-ball linebackers. Like, we're going to spend on the secondary and pass rushers, which is, like, that makes sense. But it is so hard to find a linebacker that is good on all three downs now, because everyone is spreading you out with four receivers, and you have to have linebackers that can cover, and Warner can do it all. And you look at some of these first round picks at these positions, Patrick Queen, Isaiah Simmons, whoever, and they're like losing their team's games because it's so hard to cover guys in the league. So if you find someone who's an absolute superstar like Warner is, like, I think you're thinking about it too hard if you're not putting major resources when you have like a top five guy like Warner.
I'm with you. I mean, he can do so much. And, you know, I go back to when, you know, I was young and first started watching football in the mid 80s, and your middle linebackers were dudes who had like gigantic shoulder pads and were thumpers. I mean, it was different. And Warner can, you know, he's been the number one graded cover linebacker since 2017. He's PFF's number one player under age 25. You know, Dang. He played a hybrid linebacker slot corner role at BYU. And I think people thought, well, maybe that won't translate. He was a third round pick, but it totally has. And he gives the Niners so much flexibility on defense. He's been ultra reliable. He hasn't missed an entire game. I mean, leads them in tackles year after year. And there's just like highlight after highlight of him, you know, 15, 20 yards downfield, getting into a receiver's face aggressively and breaking up a pass. So there aren't that many guys like him. He's totally worth the contract.
Darius Leonard with the Colts could be next. We continue to hear whispers on that front as well. And to the point that I was making about the Niners, and this from David Lombardi over at The Athletic, this 49ers regime, that's Lynch and Shanahan, has now awarded four positional record contracts in its four-plus years at the helm. Garoppolo in 2018, George Kittle in 2020, Trent Williams in 2021, Fred Warner in 2021, and that tight end, left tackle, linebacker grouping, obviously Warner still stands. The other two still stand as well as the highest contracts at those positions.
Mm.
Salary cap fund.
I don't think any of those are bad. Garoppolo seemed a little like early, but calling that the most, it depends on how you slice it.
Yeah, it was a little tricky.
His was fine. His was
but keep, yeah, keep him out of that because that muddles up the point. The other three Mondo deals that still stand in the market.
I'm suddenly like thinking they are due for some luck. And, well, you know, we have a long time to preview this season, but I'm feeling good about Simone Sessler's 49ers this year. I feel like they're going to be coming back.
Well, let her know. I don't think she's tracking it on any level. So, you know,
where's her fandom stand? Is it higher or lower?
Dan
since
keeps
the
in
Kaepernick
touch with her a lot, you know, closer constantly than I do really.
So. Yeah, I know Dan and Simone have something. I'm not quite sure what's happening there, but like, no, I think her fandom sort of starts when the casual fandom begins for other people, when the games begin. I don't think she's,
right,
you know,
right.
She doesn't, I've checked her phone. She has a lot of apps, potentially too many. But I don't see like the old, vestiges of the Roto World app on there or anything of that sort.
Wait, how often are you checking her phone?
Yeah, like, that's
what are you checking?
Well, she gave me the code words to get into her phone, which I don't use, but she did. But I like in reverse, I would never, not that, you know, there's just no reason. I don't care at all, but that's not a two-way street.
She gave me the code words to get into her phone. What is her phone model? What is this thing?
Well, just the four digits.
Oh, the digits. Oh,
yeah,
the
four digit pat. What, you know, it seems like.
I think, by the way, what you're.
Mark sliced off a bit of her thumbprint while she was sleeping and uses it to.
That's
to
true.
In.
Keeps it under one of those like glasses that they use for microscopes. And that's smart, by the way, that don't look too closely at Simone and I's relationship. 423-80 babies. We have a tight bond. I'll leave it at that.
Can I tell you real fast that
yes.
She's been really deep into this like online lineage thing. And we discovered she and I are 10th cousins, or however you want to say it.
Hmm.
Which really got on my radar and very much concerned me. But I guess it actually dates back to like the middle 400s in Europe. So it seems like a lot of people would maybe be in that same boat. But a concerning asterisk on
very,
our relationship.
How very Game of Thrones of the Sesslers.
Right. Minus the kingdom.
I could see that. You know, if Mark shaved and put on a wig and stuff, there's some similarity here. There.
It certainly is not. I can't say that. But that, I think you're okay. Weird. I wouldn't draw up the divorce papers just on the grounds of...
Well, we've already yeah. crossed too many thresholds to even, you know, there's nothing to
exactly.
prevent at this point.
A little late in the game. Right. All right. In other news, I mean, I wonder is there more to the Aaron Rodgers story? Because with each passing update, I feel like he's becoming less and less the good guy here. I mean, this is pretty wild. According to Adam Schefter on Twitter, The Packers offered Aaron Rodgers a 2-year extension earlier this offseason that would have kept him in Green Bay for the next 5 years, which, you know, puts him into Tom Brady age range if he played out the contract. And the extension would have made him the highest paid player in football. And Rodgers rejected the offer, obviously. And he continues to, although he hasn't really spoken about it, other than that one Scott Van Pelt ESPN SportsCenter thing at all. We had said on this podcast, like, there's so many things in sports and life that it ultimately goes back to the money. And you offer the money, then that should take care of it. Well, if this offer was as good as the Packers want people to believe, then Rodgers is continuing to make this more than about the money. He's still mad that they took a quarterback. And at what point are you just being a jerk? At what point?
I don't put anything into this one. I'm going to push back on that.
Okay.
Well, I don't know how it got out. You know, it could come from the team side. It could come from both sides. They, you know, if Rodgers wanted to show that, like, it's not about the money, it's principles, like, who knows? Maybe his side. I don't really know. But this means nothing to me that he turned down an offer. Like, everyone in the league, including Darius Leonard, we just mentioned or whatever, is like, has turned down offers this summer. That's called a negotiation. You go back and forth, and it really means nothing without knowing what the guaranteed money is and what the structure is. You know, saying that he's the highest paid guy in the league because you tacked on a bunch of like phony years at the end and then release that to the media, that means nothing.
Do you think that's what the Packers did? I mean, we don't know one way or the other, but that feels like something that would be uncouth to give him a phony offer. I feel like Aaron Rodgers isn't getting phony offers.
I think it's very possible that there was very little guaranteed money past this year. So if that was the offer, and let's say it was kind of like Tom Brady's last deal with the Patriots, where it's like, we'll give you a little bit into the second year.
Yeah, but you're speculating just as much as anybody else right now. We have no idea what the offer is.
I get it, but that's what I mean. Like, without knowing that, it means nothing to me, because that's very likely. If you look at, like, the Breeze and Brady final contracts, and even, like, the Rivers-type ones, like, that's what happened usually. Like, you give them, like, a little extra guaranteed into a second year, and, like, so what? He rejected that. Why is this coming out?
I would just go back to, like, Aaron Rodgers has been talking about breaking away from the Packers for like 18 months at this point. I mean, really since that last draft. I mean, this is not even a new topic, but we are in a weird territory. I mean, outside of like Carson Palmer, there aren't that many quarterbacks, you know, in late July who are essentially just staging total uncontrolled, like, psychological warfare with their team. I mean, maybe the Packers know more than we do, but essentially, like, Ian Rappaport came on NFL Network and said, I don't know anything. We don't know anything. We don't know what's going to happen a week from now or 4 weeks from now. And I think the weirdest scenario is if he suddenly just shows up after all this drama. Like, why did this happen? So, I mean, to me, it's like, if you're suddenly going to, if it was just about money, you could have done this with a lot less pomp and circumstance and headlines and, frankly, like, disenfranchising a super loyal Packers fan base. I mean, what good came from this if he's going to suddenly show up a fortnight from now?
I don't know. I don't want to go too hot takey on this. I just feel like it's either report to the team and stop being such a huge distraction for a team that's right there to get back to the Super Bowl, or retire, or, you know, walk away and let the team move on. But the way this is playing out is just, I don't know, man. I want to fire it into the sun. I want to fire it up there with Jeff Bezos. but I can't, because we do an NFL podcast and he's the reigning MVP. The whole thing is just ponderous, man. As Casey Kasem once said, it's effing ponderous.
We'll forgive you if, you know, we'll forgive everything. The Packers fans will too. If he just shows up and nothing, you know, and you're right, we'd be like, why would we waste our time? But that would be better than the alternative, which
and
is
it won't,
the
there won't be any
continuing.
Bad blood for anybody after that. It'll be over and you just move on. It's not too late. To stop this mess.
But I would still be a little, I'm not going to like, I'll keep it inside, but I'd still be a little annoyed at what he did over the last couple of months. It seems completely unnecessary, and it involved thousands of people who are annoyed.
And us. That includes us.
Yeah.
Most importantly, it includes us. COVID-19, that includes us. We're all connected to this, which is another ponderous thing. Can't get on the same page about this. There's medicine for this, and we can't get on the same page. Tom Pelissero reports the NFL just informed clubs that if a game cannot be rescheduled during the 18-week schedule in 2021 due to a COVID outbreak among unvaccinated players, the team with the outbreak will forfeit, my friends, and be credited with a loss. That's huge. More from the memo, which also says the team responsible for a canceled game because of an outbreak among unvaccinated players slash staff will be responsible for financial losses, Maron, and subject to potential discipline from the commissioner. Greg, it's the NFL has got the iron fist. They're never afraid to wield it, and it really feels like they are. Listen, this is a free country. You make your decisions based on how you feel. That's one of the bedrocks of the nation, and it's a great thing. But in the case of this situation, with the health of the players and the fans and everything on the line here, the iron fist is coming down and saying, get vaccinated or else.
Yeah, they're doing what they can, and this was in a four-page memo where, with a lot of other stuff, where almost nothing was in bold type, and this little two-sentence thing was, like, in bold type. So it was like, hey, Giants CEO, don't miss this sentence. And it, on one hand, it sounds scary, and it makes total sense. They're not going to extend the season. They're already extending the season. On the other hand, if this was the rule last year, no one would have forfeited a game. And you would hope things won't be worse this year. Now, is it an indication that the league might not bend over as backwards? You know, the Steelers kind of got the short end of it where they're playing like Wednesday to Tuesday and it was like never on them. Maybe they wouldn't bend over as backwards to help out the team that's in trouble this year. But if you just look at it, they never had to reschedule. They did get in all the games last year. So I would say it's pretty unlikely that they would have to use this rule.
I think part of it, I mean, from our angle a little bit too, and if you're the teams, it's like you're waking up. Remember waking up every morning, and the first thing you do was check, you know, league news to see which player got COVID. And it's like if you can get to the point where you reduce that by 90-something percent, it takes what I think, it was a sinister element added to the season for obvious reasons, but there was no vaccine and no solution. So the league did everything they could, maybe even to the point of critique of getting the season through. They pushed it through. Now it's like we have a functional way to reduce all that nonsense. And if you have 30% of players saying, I don't want to be part of that solution, then it's like, look, you're working for a company. This isn't you out in a field hanging out with your friends making those decisions. You're part of a massive billion-dollar company. Play by the rules or pay the fine.
And this Delta variant, which is causing issues, big issues, and it's going to continue to cause issues. So I don't know how, you know, we're seeing breakthroughs all over the place. Our own Rich Eisen, the face of NFL Network, he posted last week on Instagram that he had contracted COVID, even though he had gotten his two shots. Big Yankees fan, Aaron Judge, and several Yankees, some of them who had the vaccine, they tested positive and are currently on the injured list as a result. So, I mean, I think it's overly hopeful, I think, to expect, oh, well, last year was last year. 2020 was a mess. 2021 is going to be much better because we're seeing things that we still don't understand. And it's very scary. And the Dallas Cowboys, let's talk about one of those teams connected to COVID. You have to get to over an 85% vaccination threshold. The team and I guess it's not just the players. Is it all personnel? That I'm not totally clear on.
No, but it's the players.
Players, yeah. Specifically, 85% vaccination.
The personnel were all like close to 100%
yeah.
back.
Yeah, it's
back,
like you know, high 90s. Teams.
If you hit 85% as a team, you're able to go about your business in a much less restrictive way. The Cowboys will open training camp under stricter COVID-19 protocols because they did not reach that 85% threshold. Jared Jones did one of his pressers. On Wednesday, he had this to say about where the Cowboys are in this realm.
We have, out of our 90 players here, we have a handful that, in my mind, have still to commit to this. A handful. And a hand is five. And that's iffy in that several of, in my mind, of that finger of five are on their way to potentially having their vaccine.
Wait, what? My biggest takeaway there is, so a handful is five? Did Jared just, I never knew that that was what a handful is. And then he said, like, each finger counts a person? Like, I didn't know a finger is a person. He's breaking news to me. That's developing news. Handful.
Well, let's say you took a handful of M&Ms. That's not five.
No.
So I think he's, I don't know. That's Jerry Jones's math. Jerry Jones, who spent 61 minutes opening the press conference from what I could calculate. Then at one point,
he talked for 61 minutes?
This is one of these weird days where I was tracking NFL Network in my house. This went on forever. Like, I saw the sun, like, moving.
Why do you always watch NFL Network on the one day the Cowboys have a 90-minute press conference?
He was like, I'm back from vacation. I want to see what's going on. We got the TV show Friday. They're in Oxnard. Like, their training camp is starting. We're taping this on Thursday. They have their first practice today. So football is back.
But one little note about that, like, after he went on that. And on, and it really was, like, the most Jerry. We already saw it during the Dak Prescott extension press thing where it was just like, who is this guy? But at like 60 minutes in, he remembers that his head coach, Mike McCarthy, is actually there and sitting next to him. And he just turned to him. He's like, coach, would you like to make any introductory statements? And Mike McCarthy is like about to talk. And then NFL Network's like, let's go to commercial. But we'll be right back. This is your head coach. That's a very strange setup in Dallas. That is the job.
I love it.
I gotta say, it's been Mike McCarthy's been in the wilderness for a couple of years now. He was out of the league after getting fired by the Packers. He had that hatchet job, the hit piece on him, and I think some publication when he was like getting a massage during team meetings. He gets a job with the Cowboys. The team sucks last year. He gets more fire this year. He's got like the George Michael faith beard. And the aviators on. He's got like a pair of $800 aviators on. And I'm thinking to myself, like, all right, middle-aged Mike McCarthy, you're showing the rest of us heading that direction that you could still look a little. Yeah.
Well, that's your type of guy, you know?
I mean, a little overrated,
big tugboat-looking guy.
He looks fine. I'm not about to station a movie trilogy around him or anything, but you know,
they are loving this extra week of coverage though. I think they volunteer to do the Hall of Fame game every year just so Jerry can get like a full week.
Oh yeah.
No other podcast is tracking this McCarthy glow up story.
Ricky, you're not into these sorts of things. Bearish males in their 50s, but I want to ask you a question. Did you see Mike McCarthy in the beard with the aviators?
Yeah, I did, and I didn't make any of those noises you were making. And I never want to hear you make those noises again.
Chica-chica. Oh, yeah.
What are you, the Kool-Aid man? Like,
just take a look. Everybody pause the podcast, pull up a picture of that press conference, and tell me that Mike McCarthy isn't doing something right.
He's doing something better than the unshaven Mike McCarthy like of old in Green Bay, where there are some issues going on there.
The nude Mike McCarthy on the massage table in his office, that guy. Yeah.
Better than that incarnation.
All right. Anyway, Jarrah, 85%. Good luck with that.
It just seems like he's wearing sunglasses. That's basically what's the difference. It does make him look cooler.
He just looks better.
He's got a nice beard.
There's something to come in his life. Not everything's in the rearview mirror. And some people think that about Mike McCarthy. Like, he had the street named for him outside Lambeau. He won the titles. He had all those runs. And now this is kind of the epilogue. You know, this is the elderly lion out in the safari being... You know, waiting.
I mean,
for
he's
the
an
end.
Offensive guy, and this is the. You know, I don't know if any of those Packers team had as much talent as this Cowboys team does on offense.
There he is. That is not a lion in winter. That is a man that has more to accomplish. He kind of looks like late period George Michael, like right before
you
things
do have
went
that right.
When things went really south for George, and rest in peace, it was like, all right, this guy is plugged in.
I mean, he better have like 11 wins in his future, or he's not going to be sitting up on that podium next summer.
Oh, come on, he's the Cowboys.
He's still in Texas. He's coming back next week. He's going to show up for our first like network show back in LA with the aviators on, with a nice beard, with a Cowboys hat. Weirdly, he's like,
I don't know if I could do the beard. That's the only thing. I could definitely do the full face like McCarthy. I could do the aviators, but I don't know about the beard.
Does your beard not grow out like a normal man's beard?
We all tried that. We all did it a year ago.
You know what COVID taught us? The normal man's beard is actually closer to Greg's beard or my beard, which kind of exist in this in-between realm. I think you had a fuller beard for sure. Wes was more in the... Well, Wes had a pretty good beard, I think.
Yeah, I think he did.
But the man that
could grow...
Yeah,
he was a mountain man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wes and Mark, you guys looked a little unruly.
Yeah.
Yes.
The truly full beard, that is a positive thing. But the negative thing about having a full beard, and this thing I'm happy about in my own life, is that I'm noticing even men that I've known for years and years and years, you just, these men, you keep on getting hairier and hairier and hairier, right, and hairier, and hair's popping up in all different areas of your body. And it's just wild. So the guys that have the big mountain beard, it looks good, it looks masculine, but you're paying for it typically elsewhere on the bod.
Wait, so you in your 40s, you're saying that, no, like, well, I don't want to dive into it, but like, it's a credit to you that you're already sort of hairless
or seal-like? It's
not a credit.
It's like I can't grow a full beard, but I'm not like one of those guys that has like a hairy back and the whole thing's a mess.
Oh, sure. Now, who's asking for that?
The neck has like just hair pouring out of the back of the neck and everything. It's just like, what is going on with your body? You look like a wolf man.
Like a lot of body image things come in and out of vogue, but I don't think hairy back, and it's been probably hundreds of years since that's been
an attraction point. I like that you came back for this show because Monday Night Football news, Mark Sessler. Hit it, Ricky. 4 NFL quarterbacks Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, will take part in an alternate Monday Night Football broadcast over the next 3 seasons. The worldwide leader announced on Monday. That's like when Michael Jackson called himself the King of Pop. He just put out a press release one day in like 1991. Please refer to me as the King of Pop. ESPN, please refer to us as the worldwide leader.
Deion Sanders, please refer to me as Coach Sanders. I don't know if you saw that.
Yes, I did see that. The Monday Night Football Megacast, as it's called, will air on ESPN2 for 10 games in each of the next 3 seasons and will include current and former NFL players and celebrities joining the Manning brothers on the broadcast. There is no host in place yet, but my agent will be placing a call. And this is a statement from Peyton Manning. He's got a statement out, Sessler. Here it is. This partnership with ESPN and the Walt Disney Company reflects an ongoing shared commitment to offering fans fun, innovative content. ESPN Plus has been a terrific partner for Omaha Productions as we built out the Places franchise, The Places. And we're excited to co-create a new megacast format that will have something for everyone. Yeehaw! I added the yeehaw.
I mean, my first reaction was like, what's Brian Greasy thinking? Because this isn't like you have to sign up and pay for ESPN Plus, although it's on, I'm sure it'll be on that too. They're going to put it on ESPN too.
Right. So that is like, that is not a vote of confidence for your number one team, Levy, Greasy, Riddick, Salters.
And it's not their fault, but if you're like Greasy, for instance, who, you know, I know you like Dan, you did a solid job. They all did. It was okay. It was a solid thing. Greasy is in that 98 draft with Peyton Manning. It's like, He was like the 6th or 7th pick, you know, he's down in the 3rd round. He's, you know, been out of the league for a while. He's like trying to earn his media career. And then here comes old Peyton Manning, who got taken right atop that draft again, swooping in. And it's like, I don't know. Personally, I'm probably going to watch that Manning thing and see how it is. Like then I'll adjust. But that's my first instinct is I know they're not at the game, which I do think hurts, but I kind of want to hear what Peyton and Eli have to say, especially if like, you know, they're giving each other the business. Could be good.
I mean, they've been testing this out with ESPN, with college football, you know, the national championship game where they had coaches sitting around a table talking. I watched some of that and like, I thought it was great. So I just think this is the way they're going, where it's like, we don't have to convince all viewers that our 3-man booth is the only way to observe this event. And I'm typically a little down on the Manning as comedic talent in commercials and stuff. But for this, I'd want to watch it. I do wonder, though, because whenever you talk to guys that announce these games, like they spend hours and hours and hours breaking down film of the two opponents for that Monday night affair. Is that like Lewis Riddick is doing that without question? Are Eli and Peyton going to be like that? I mean, they're ultra competitors, so I would think so, but that is extremely time consuming. Is that their method? Or is it like, hey, let's just sit around and be us?
We'll see. And the one thing that got me nervous is them overstuffing the booth. You put in a capable guy as the host, and you let Peyton and Eli do their thing, analyzing the game. They have natural chemistry, obviously, as brothers. I don't need, like, Rob Riggle in the booth with them, or who's the voice guy on Fox. Like Frank Caliendo doing his John Gruden impression and mucking it up, or some ABC, you know, ESPN, ABC, Disney family. It's like, oh, here's Anthony Anderson in for the second quarter. Like, you will chase me away immediately if you try to turn it into a promotional vehicle for your various Disney entities. Just give me Peyton, Eli, and a guy that's steering the ship. And I think that would be, I think it's a really good idea. They can mess it up so easily, though. And I think they will.
We don't even need the other Manning brother, the one that has like a gig at Fox, you know?
Cooper. You know who's Cooper. Super excited? Cooper.
Hey, Cooper. What do you think, Cooper?
We don't need Cooper in there, but what we do need is New York Post's Andrew Marchand, our clicker guy.
Marchand
doing constant columns about it. I mean,
yes.
Marchand, when he saw that, he was like, I never have to think of a column idea. Anytime I'm a little bit low, I just fire up the last ESPN2 telecast.
Marchand. That's a sexy beat. Yep, he's got a lot
flying.
To work with.
Flying to a new destination, Melvin Ingram. Just talked about Melvin Ingram. He was on the street as of the beginning of this week, but not anymore. He signs with the Steelers, a one-year contract, and I know it, Sizzler. I know as a Browns fan who you think you got the Steelers by the throat, this is the type of signing that you worry is going to come back and haunt the rest of the AFC North in December, yay or nay.
You know, the note I'm looking at right here that I put down is this is the kind of signing that works for Pittsburgh.
Yep.
It just will, so I'm completely with you. And look, I know that he had no sacks last year in 7 games and was injured the year before. He's missed he's gone to IR with knee issues 2 years. So there's age, there's injury concerns, but there's also the fact that like he recorded the most pressures last year without a sack in 7 games, 28. So this is not a player who's done.
I call that a clowny, by the way. I call that a clowny.
Clowny was the other. Yeah. Clowny was the other.
No, but it is players. A clowny. If any game where you lead with pressures and don't have a sack, you pulled a clowny.
He tied clowny, so he totally pulled a clowny.
Tie clowny? That is so
he and clowny
funny.
Were tied okay. at the top of the list yeah. with 28. So you're dead on. I mean, if it doesn't work out, they're still very thin at edge rusher. I mean, they're counting on guys who have not necessarily been. I mean, TJ Watt, and then you've got Alex Highsmith, they have a rookie,
Quincy
Roche. I like
Alex Highsmith. That, to me, that's, you know, if Ingram's healthy, that's a good 1-2-3. Highsmith is the starter. Ingram comes off the bench. Hopefully you keep him healthy that way. He's also just a beast. And they lost Vince Williams, who wasn't like a great inside linebacker, but he just retired surprisingly this week. He was going to start for them. He kind of was that locker room, like, fire everyone up, like, beast guy. And Ingram seems like one of the best guys in the league for that. Like, I have no player has ever made a bigger impression on me just hearing him talk in person 2 different times in Melvin Ingram. I just wanted to like run through a wall. People say that though. It's like, what if I did run through a wall? They'd be like, what the f*** are you doing,
well,
Greg?
What are you going to be running through a wall or just, I don't think that the through just, part is going to apply.
You just would, you wouldn't get to run through it.
Hey, fuck you, Greg.
You wouldn't go through it. You would just hurt yourself. And then everyone would be like, what are you doing? And be like, I don't know, Melvin Ingram. I really like him.
Yeah, you do it for someone, and then the person's like, wait, why did you just do that? Your life is effectively over now, the life you knew. Well, I did it for you.
I didn't ask you, bro. What are you doing?
And finally, some upsetting news. New York Jets assistant coach Greg Knapp fighting for his life after suffering severe injuries in a bicycle accident. He was on his bike riding it near his home in Danville, California, 58 years old. He was struck by a single motorist at 2:49 p.m. The motorist, thankfully, cooperating with authorities, drug and alcohol, not a factor. So it just sounds like a horrible accident. And God, those type of things are when you're like, and hopefully Knapp pulls through this. And he was a new addition to the Robert Sala staff. He was working with the quarterbacks and assistant coach. He was going to be working a lot with Zach Wilson. and hopefully he will down the line. But just those type of things are like a guy going for a run or riding on a bike and a car clips him or hits him. You just never know when things can change.
Yeah, the one thing that I thought about that was listening to Steve Wyche. Again, I was watching Network yesterday, but Steve Wyche, very like commenting about him. And this coach is one of the most popular guys around. He's been around for a long time. And it wasn't just other coaches. It was like journalists coming out of the woodwork to say how much, how great he had been to them over the years. So best wishes.
I mean, he was Steve Young's coach back in the day. He was Peyton Manning's coach in Denver, quarterback coach, while he was breaking all those records. It's the type of, I swear, like every friend I have that bikes a lot has some sort of terrible accident. And it has scared me off of buying a bike. I've been wanting to buy a bike to drive, you know, to go around with my kids. I could do that around the neighborhood, you would think, but I don't know. This is like, just seems like it always happens.
Best wishes to Mr. Knapp. All right, that's what's happening in the news. All right, as promised. Listen. Yeah, it was, listen, you a little peek behind the curtain. Sometimes a segment comes together easily, an idea comes out and everybody's on board with it. Sometimes these things are labors of love. You know, it's like you have your whole life to write your first album. It becomes a hit, and then you have 6 months to write your second. And sometimes that's what it feels like when the sand is just falling through the hourglass. And in this case, I just kept on sending like C-plus after C-plus segment idea at the guys. And I was like, I was hoping one of you guys would throw one back, throw me a life preserver. But well, I just kept chucking them at you.
We should do it the day before then. By the time it's like an hour before the show, I'm driving kids to camp and it's tough. You can't, you know, you're
well, wait a minute. I threw out an idea
you
early
did as
in the morning.
Well.
I threw out an idea and Dan's response was, actually, I'm looking for an idea with some pop. So I was like, all right, I'm out. Like, I,
no, but
you know,
yours,
I've been thrown
no,
out
as it worked
plane.
Out, mine weren't really any better than yours. But then yours was fine, especially first you're off the IL, you know, we're easing you back into action. Sure. Anyway, came down on this. What do you do? Well, you got some stakes. All right, let's add some stakes into this thing. Your life's on the line. Okay. And you need to pick a player in our league who will have his greatest season ever. And if you're not right, it's out. You're done. Time's up. The sand is through the hourglass for you, my friends. So with that in mind, one guideline. And Greg, you were pitching on text and it was already in my mind. So we're on the same page on this one. It cannot be a player who's entering a second season, because it's very natural for a rookie to take the jump and have his quote unquote best year in year two. It has to be someone year three or beyond that, their best season, and the stakes couldn't be higher. If it's not his best season, we're out of here. Mark, welcome back. You're in the fryer. You're up first.
All right, I'm going to go with a player who I think is an ultra talent, but has missed 21 games over the last two seasons.
Risky, because an injury pretty much ends your life here.
Well, that's true. What we've seen of this player, though, suggests that he could be the best in the league. And that is Derwin James. And here's what I like about Derwin James this season. It is Brandon Staley. And, you know, I was watching the Flying Coach podcast with Peter Schrager, and he had Mike Tomlin on. And Mike Tomlin said, when you're a coach, like, it's one thing to take, like, C players and turn them into
Mark's
B players.
Mark's going down. We're going to lose them.
Oh, is this what we're doing with this?
The guy's missed, like, 27 of his last 32 games. But keep going, Mark.
Well, I would say this, though. If his rookie year alone, I mean, people were comparing him to some of the great defensive backs of all time. And if he does
not return...
But that's
a reason not to pick him for this exercise, because he was a first-team All-Pro. That is the bar. He has to have his best season
ever.
He's
got to beat that rookie year.
Let me finish my point here, and I will explain, okay? What Tomlin said, though, the key to really becoming a next-level coach is keeping your A players at A level or better. And I really think if you look at what Brandon Staley did with Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey a year ago, it got him a job because of what he did. I mean, the whole league, by the end of the year, realized this is a defensive wizard. So I think a Derwin James paired with Brandon Staley in that defense, and you go back to what Derwin James, the way he was creatively used in that first Lamar Jackson playoff game where the Ravens lost to the Chargers, there are just signposts that tell me he's not only going to be that player, but that player plus more. I think he's probably super motivated to come back. They picked up his fifth-year option, which says a lot to me. I cannot wait to see. You know that I'm high on Brandon Staley. The pairing of Staley and Derwin James is going to create, I think, one of the better stories of the league. And there'll be no looking back to the rookie season saying he wasn't who he was as a rookie. It'll be paired with the fact that he came back from what he's come back with, the way he's used. here. It's going to happen to me. It's going to happen. I promise you right now.
Are you a kind of a casket guy or more like a urn guy?
No, I would not want to be put into. I would not want to be put below the ground at all. Urn. All right,
good.
That feels very old school.
But that's
to
a
me.
Good call, though. That's a good call, Mark. Because Derwin James, if he does get back, you just worry about the nature of the injuries, the lower body.
Not a good call.
Is he just going to be, even if he is healthy, which is a huge if, did he lose that magic that was in his legs, that lower half, the football gods were just not on board with him?
There is some risk. And if he's failed again, then I'm suddenly taken out by a female assassin walking down the streets of El Segundo, you know why. But I am betting on a healthy season.
No, I love the instincts. I love Derwin James. I love you, Mark, though, so I want to see you alive. And so I think I took this exercise literally, and I think you don't want a guy that set such a high bar. He was the first team All-Pro. He was getting some thoughts of like defensive player of the year. So he was like maybe the best safety in the league already. And is he going to like warm up to this season a little bit as he gets over the injury? The one thing I love, though, is you're right. Staley in that system has made safeties way better. If you think about Vic Fangio, where Staley, you know, who he learned from, you know, Eddie Jackson in Chicago, Justin Simmons in Denver, and then Staley last year with John Johnson got him paid. That part of it makes sense. It's kind of a safety-centric offense. That part of it makes sense, so I hope he stays healthy and that you stay healthy, my friend.
I miss my Uncle Mark. You're up next, Greg.
All right. I took it more like trying to be safe here, so I was
life
like,
and
well,
death.
If we can't, yeah, it's life and death. If we can't do second-year players, I'll go third because that's less years to try to improve upon. And I'm going to go Diontae Johnson of the Steelers, who
I've
always loved. And everyone always talks about his drops. He almost got benched last year because of his drops. It's like, that's like T.O. Forever they talked about T.O.'s drops. Like, to drop that many passes, you got to be open all the time. And Diontae Johnson is open all the time. He's a favorite of our friend Matt Harmon in reception. I just love watching him after the catch. Before the catch, he's going to be there. And his high right now is 900 yards last year. And he was a guy who, when it's going, he gets 10, 15, 20 targets. I like Chase Claypool a lot, but I think Johnson is the number one. I think they'll throw him a ton of passes. I feel like he clears that bar. And he clears it by enough where this doesn't feel like I'm trying to cheat. You know, he goes 1,300 yards, and he's like the clear one and has a monster year.
I have a question, though. Specifically with this exercise, Greg is correct. I think he can surpass the yardage, what was like 923. He had 88 catches.
Sure, he's so got to pass. He's got to pass everything. He's got to have
a better
year. If
he had 87, Greg is off the earth.
I mean, if he goes 87 for 1250, you're taking me out.
Mark, the other two guys we're at the gates, St. Peter, and we decide. Only it's not heaven or hell. It's just you live or die. It's a little bit of a labored metaphor, but it's in that realm. So we'll decide after the season. We'll circle back.
I mean, assuming we're alive.
But what about the Ben Roethlisberger side of things? And the fact that they have Najee Harris there as their new running back. Is it possible that this just is not going to be an explosive passing offense at all? I think that's the biggest
risk. And
the
there's
player,
a lot of mouths
sure.
to field. Claypool's good. I think Juju's almost underrated at this point. James Washington's good. They have Ebron at tight end. You're right. It's a lot of mouths to feed, but I think
risky
he goes
for
over
life
the top.
Or death.
Check actually got me. I almost retweeted this picture he sent out that Roethlisberger showed up to camp in a shirt that said, Sevenge, like seven revenge, and it was like the Roethlisberger revenge tour, and I was like, oh, he is leaning into this. I love this. And then I realized, oh, Sheck just like got a Photoshop.
Did you see in general
he got me.
At the end of his the end of Ben's career is really just conversations about whether he's fat or not. Did you see how
he's
he looks
good.
In the shirt? He looks pretty tight, looks pretty right. I don't know if it's Tom Brady tight. Because we were told that his fitness regimen was even better than Tom's or his diet. But he looks like he's ready for the season.
One thing about that bothers me, though, like why all these people tracking the fatter thing. There were times when he ballooned a little bit. What are we asking him to be like a 148-pound breatharian? I mean, he is a larger boned human playing quarterback. That's just
well,
who he
is. His shirt said the word different on it. This was not photoshopped. So he is one of those guys. I think he knows he's going to have a lot of pictures of him being taken in that walk to the first training camp, and he wears a shirt different, and he's looking good in it.
So I think you're both done for based on your first two picks. Mark, you really shot for the stars. And Greg, I was kind of with you. And then Greg made the correct point about how great, truly great Derwin James was as a rookie. So you have to get past that bar. And then Greg, I think there's so many reasons why the Steelers passing attack.
What, it's got to be worse than a year ago? Why?
Could be. Absolutely could be. But let me give you one, Greg. Damian Harris, your boy, third year. Gotcha. Wasn't used a lot as a rookie in New
England. He didn't even play as a rookie. He was hurt.
Third year.
This is safe, but okay.
Of course it is. My life's on the line.
Yeah, that's fair.
Third year. Great stat from PFF. The three highest graded running backs, according to that analytics site. Number one, Derrick Henry. He better be. Number two, ahead of Dalvin Cook, Damian Harris. And you know what? I get it, because the whole thing with PFF is studying every snap. And Damian Harris is one of those guys that passes the sniff test. You watch him, you're like, this guy's just better than a lot of running backs. And he hasn't had that true breakthrough season. But if you watch last season, his ability to run through tacklers, just be someone that you don't want to have to deal with once he hits the hole, it was all there. And he got beat up last year. I think he had an injury that slowed him.
He missed 6 games last year. Yeah, barely didn't play at all as a rookie because of injury, basically.
Right. So that is my risk really more than anything. But I think he's the clear number one guy in a New England offense that is really trying to piece some things together right now with Cam Newton still there. And now Mac Jones in the mix. You get the idea this is going to be a run-heavy offense with a guy, Harris, that Belichick, I think he trusts him. He says, I'm going to give you the rock, give you the chance to be that dude. And I could see a 1,300-yard season coming out of it. A Corey Dillon-esque season for Damian Harris in year three. And my life's on the line, and I feel decent about it.
I think you're fine. I mean, this is I wouldn't call this like Joseph Campbell, like hero's journey stuff. He has to surpass 691 yards.
I mean, I think it's smart.
He's
got a family to worry about.
If the exercise, I can find a running back who had 520 yards last year. You know,
add Trent Brown. Owenu looks good. You know, they've got on paper, they might have one of the best run blocking lines in the league. That's kind of how they're built.
And to your point, Mark, yeah, you could say I'm playing it safe. But again, the stakes are as high as the stakes could possibly be here. My life is on the line. And B, I don't think he's going to run for 704 yards at 4.0 a pop. I think he's going to have a big season there won't even be any need to even study the 2 years. It's like, oh, that was his big breakout year. Greg, I think you're doing some type of making the leap piece for the .com. I hope Damian Harris is a part of it. Otherwise, you're thinking too much.
No, he is. He's on it.
Yes. All right, let's go around one more time, Mark. Hopefully you have protected yourself a little bit more with your second choice.
I actually came up with one that was extremely controversial in terms of the fact that no one would buy it, but I'm going to go with what I would consider the safer of the three options I came up with, and that is Joe Mixon. And this is no home run. This is no home run. He's never topped 1,200 yards, but he's come close. But last year, he was on pace when he got hurt in week 6 for 1,600 yards. Do not play the funeral music just yet. I think this is the situation. You've got a healthier offense.
Mark,
you're going to have Joe Burrow. You've got no Giovanni Bernard. And I have a little bonus nugget here. I think Giovanni Bernard down in Tampa Bay, I tried to get this out during our West Hollywood broadcast, will have the biggest passing receiving year of his entire career. And he's had a couple good ones as Tom Brady's James White.
Wait, you need
James
these
White.
Both to happen?
Both
are happening. Why are we talking about Gio Bernard?
Both are happening. The two former teammates will now both have. But for Bernard, it's a nugget.
Do you have a basically? Mark has a death wish. Like, he needs to feel alive. He's like, sorry, Simone. I just had to add Gio to the mix to make it.
Mark, this is not
twice as hard.
This is not Groundhog Day. You don't. Okay. The lights don't go out, and you wake up in your bed at 6 a.m. with Sonny and Cher playing.
It's
not going to happen.
If Mixon does not eclipse 1,200 yards, I think he is a easy candidate to do that if
easy.
He stays healthy. Easy, because there's really no competition for him there. There isn't like a clear, like, he is the guy. And I think that with Joe Burrow, healthy, there's going to be a lot like more way to confuse a defense. I mean, their passing game they have one of the best wide receiver duos out there. And so that to me looks like it's a good setup for Mixon. He'll have his best year. I will live.
Full disclosure. When I was doing my research for this segment, I did think about Mixon. And the reason I thought about it is because I've written on the .com that he, to me, is a long shot superstar club type guy. He's a guy that I feel like could have a big year, but there are just so many reasons why it won't happen. Again, injury risk is a big thing. He missed half of last season with a lower body injury. So you have that to contend with. You have a makeshift offensive line. They famously passed on Penei Sewell in favor of the wide receiver. And I know a lot of people are like, ah, it was fine. That's good. If the wide receiver is great, it's going to be awesome. But if Chase is not an absolute stud and Sewell turns into a rock on the end of offensive line in Detroit, you're going to think to yourself, my God, how did you look that gift horse in the mouth and walk away? And then it's like the coaching staff. Well, we've talked about this. Totally anonymous coaching staff. Zach Taylor has done nothing to show that he's a true coaching tree dude off the Sean McVay tree that you can trust. These are all reasons why it won't. And with your life on the line, I feel like getting involved with the Bengals is never a good idea.
It's tricky. One, I will say, though, like if you're going to say that injuries from a year ago are predictive or potentially a problem, like, again, he was on pace for 1,600 yards on the ground, 300 through the air, then he got injured. So, I mean, there was the production, too. And I'm with you. The coaching staff is slightly anonymous,
God, Mark,
but I'm going to have to hope that they form an identity.
What was that?
Oh, my God, Mark, stop it.
Well.
I mean, I totally buy you with Mixon. That's why it's like I totally am with you on Mixon. That's going to just make it all the more painful when you're like in week 15. Oh, wait, Gio Bernard has like 200 yards, for the season of the Bucs. Why did I add that unnecessarily?
No, I feel more strongly about that point. And I think that will go down as a historically bombshell that I've just dropped.
You should have gotten behind that random white Joe Funk.
Mark, you're so crazy.
Don't get me started on Funk.
All right, Greg, how about you? Mark, I'm very worried about you.
I'm worried. This one,
Of life right now.
I feel a little safer about this one than my first one. It's a fourth-year player. It's tight end Dallas Goedert, rising up to a top-five tight end type of player. I think he's that good. I think he's been in tough situations. Zach Ertz is, expected to be on his way out, and Goddard's career best numbers were in 2019, 58 for 607 and 5. To me, he could be the number one there. I know Devontae Smith is going to get a lot of run, but Jalen Hurts, not maybe the most accurate guy deep into the outside. Like, he's going to be feeding his boy Goddard. There's no Hurts there. I could see him like going over 1,000. I feel confident about Dallas Goedert.
I like it a lot. It makes total sense. There is this, though. There were reports even this morning, though, that Ertz is likely to stay. Now, they're just reports, but it's not an absolute that he's out the door.
It's a good point. He is still showing that whole thing fizzled, and he is showing up to training camp. I kind of figure they'll find a spot for him or even cut him by the time we get.
What is Goddard's high? What's his high water mark?
58 for 607 and 5. That's okay, but I think he's going to be a Pro Bowl type of player where he's skying well above that. And I do think he really does have the talent. Like, he can block a little bit, and that's great. People like to talk about that, but he really is a good downfield Kittle type of player that I don't think he's not Kittle, but I don't think he's maxed out his ability.
If Ertz is there and healthy,
it's a little bit of a problem.
Do they share the field, or are they going to be splitting snaps a lot?
I think Goddard is going to be the one regardless. I mean, Goddard put up 524 last year despite missing five games. So I'm baking in a little bit of safety. All he would have to do is really keep going what he was doing last year.
You had the lowest version of Ertz last year, who was hurt the entire time. Right. And I think everyone is ready to like throw him off the earth. But if he's healthy,
that was the first time
Goddard
got hurt. So he doesn't like have a history of it.
Right.
He had two healthy seasons before that. So if he, to me, he should get 800. Falling out of bed.
I agree with you, Mark. I've been saying that on this show all off season. Zach Ertz, the disrespect thrown the man's way, like he can't play anymore. Maybe he can.
He couldn't last year. Maybe it was just an injury thing,
well,
and his back's
going
to suddenly be healthy, but he couldn't last year.
He did not look healthy.
He's also a proud man, an athlete, a champion, that perhaps he'll want to shut some of the Rosenthals of the football community up.
Oh, I mean, he shut me up in that Super Bowl. How about, what he did on the biggest plays?
Right in front of us, baby.
Yeah, but you're talking again. So he's going to have to shut you up again.
That was right in front of us, Greg. We were in that second level there in Minneapolis, and he reached over that goal line.
If only I didn't have like the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history the year before, and then a sixth Super Bowl to top it off, like old school, you know, the next year to really just sandwich that tough memory. I mean,
fair enough. All right. Finally, Kyler Murray, let's go. Third year. He was on pace for, if he didn't get hurt, if he doesn't hurt his shoulder on Thursday Night Football last year, I'm not doing this because I think his numbers, he probably would have ended up throwing for close to 4,400 yards. He would have went over 30 touchdowns. His rushing numbers would be even better than they were, and they were excellent. So again, and this continues to pop up in this conversation, health, a lot of these guys are tied to health. And if Murray, entering his age 24 season and his third season in Cliff Kingsbury's offense, an offense that I think is solid, maybe not spectacular, but it's solid. I think he has a very good chance with his skill set as a former number one overall pick to have a Lamarian-type season in year three. And I think he has the chance to do something no one has ever done, which is go 4,000, 1,000 in a season, throw for 4,000 yards, run for 1,000. That's at the high end of this. But even if he's a step below that, I still think he could throw for around 4,000 yards, throw for 30 touchdowns, which he's never done, add the 700 or 800 yards in the ground and another 5 or 6 scores, and clearly develop to the point where year three was the best we've seen from Kyler Murray yet. Get behind superstars entering their prime if your life's on the line, and that's what I'm doing.
Makes sense. I think it's pretty safe. I think you're counting on some people I'm not totally sure about, though, to help you get over the line. Rondale Moore, everyone's excited about it, but he's like, you know, an undersized rookie. AJ Green, Chase Edmonds, maybe as their starting running back. And then Cliff Kingsbury as the key one. Like, can Kingsbury with Murray and this group around him? And, you know, I didn't mention Hopkins, obviously, but I think you need those other guys to come through and you need Cliff to help him out to make this safe. Because Murray did rack up those rushing yards last year, and it was a pretty good season. But you need a little help from the other Cardinals, and Cliff is kind of the guy that I'd be most concerned about.
I mean, I would argue that if he just simply, to your point, Dan, he just wasn't able to do Kyler Murray things for that later part of the season after their injury, and then the offense fell apart. Even if the team is not great, statistically, we're talking about him besting his statistics. I think he could do all that and more. Look at some of Matthew Stafford's.
His stats weren't that bad, though. I mean, he goes 3,900, 26-12, touchdown interception, and 800 yards rushing. Pretty good. I think he'll top those,
too. He could pass 26, though, and maybe even lower his picks, right?
Sure. I think it's a pretty safe bet. But he did have a nice step forward as a year two. It wasn't like the explosion, but he did take a step last year for sure.
His step forward to keep me alive in this exercise will come as a passer, because he ran for 819 yards and 11 touchdowns last year. That's really good. That's awesome. Like, beating that will be, and if he does that and improves as a passer, he is absolutely going to be in the MVP conversation. But I just think that's the ceiling. I think I'm just a Kyler Murray guy. So
Damian Harris have more rushing yards than Kyler Murray? And will that impact your survival rate?
Well, if he matches Kyler Murray last year, I'll be safe, because that will be Damian Harris's greatest year.
We need him to, because, you know,
I'm not here to play hero ball, Sessler. I'm here to play live and raise my children ball.
All the Suns fans, all the Phoenix fans out there, they need a pick me up. They need Murray to come through after a heartbreaking NBA Finals.
Cardinals,
that was a nice run.
It was. Zumwalt, he's doing okay. The Cardinals beat writers and all the people covering. I get it. I'm going to give you a pass for the summer months here, because there's not a lot to write about. But we don't need any more AJ Green profiles. As I'm doing my research for this seg and I'm trying to like learn more about Kyler Murray's season, everything's just about Kyler Murray thinking AJ Green's going to have a big year.
I hope they're right. Like, there's no evidence on the field last year, but I was really stunned how bad Green was. I always have been like an AJ Green is a Hall of Famer type of guy and is almost underrated for how dominant he was in a weird situation. It was ugly last year, but I want to hope that, you know, like Mike McCarthy, maybe he can show that aging men still have something in front of them. AJ Green.
And I hope that Kyler goes even a size greater with his helmet this year. the giant helmet and that tiny body. I love it. What a combo. That's entertainment. Just the visuals. Wonderful.
I'd like to see you tell him he has a tiny body to his face. I mean, that guy is, I'm sure, is cut up, is fit.
Right.
You know?
Oh, no. Listen, that's why my life's on the line. He's probably got a tremendous bod. But that helmet just, it throws everything out of whack. It's hard to really get a grasp on his entire physical makeup because his helmet is the size of a refrigerator.
Yeah, very top heavy.
All right. Good stuff. Mark, are you going to stick around? You're with us for the network show tomorrow. Big network show, NFL Network, the Around the NFL broadcast.
Friday.
I have to.
3
I think
PM
if I'm
Eastern. No, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Check
if
it out.
If I didn't show up to that, I might start finally getting on the radar of management, who I don't even think they know that I am part of the company. But if you just continually don't show up to assignments, you've got issues. So,
I mean, they noticed those tweets that you had about going back to the office. I know some management figures definitely.
Well, I've
is that so?
I'm chilling on that front due to...
Wait, dude. Do you have
talk.
That on authority? Good authority?
Well,
Greg,
just,
that
you know,
got
was,
on people's radar?
It was
radar?
Sort of, it was, no, more as a joking thing. Just like, I don't think Mark wants to come back to the office, it seems.
And then they're going to check into today's show. And it's like, oh, Mark's back. And he's literally wearing a Hawaiian shirt. This guy's checked out.
He came with some great analysis. And he put his.
He did.
He definitely took some risks. Took some big risks.
Big risks.
Right. Costly ones.
Watched NFL Network all day in preparation for today's show. And that shows that. Sessler's back and he's ready.
Happy to be.
How you enjoy it, Mark? We have a little mini book club going on. We did on Monday's show pop culture recommendations, and I was singing the praises of the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood book by Tarantino. And we have a little mini book club. Me, you, Gonzo,
yeah,
chopping it up. This must be nice because you are the biggest fan of Tarantino's picture of all.
Well, and also not only that, but you know, because Colleen will be traveling for training camp, we actually, you know, the book centers somewhat around the Sharon Tate murders. We're the three of us are going to go watch the film together at Gonzo's sort of lush seaside kingdom and watch the movie together on the night of those of that event. But the book, I think, was excellent. You guys had some minor issues with some of the chapters. But you know what I get every time I talk about this and I get someone tweeting me, it's like, you guys always talk about this movie and this book, and I read it and I hate it. I don't care it's not my
stick
issue.
Stick it up your ace.
Right. It's not my issue. I think here's what's concerning for most authors. He wrote his first novel, Tarantino, and it's better, it's more inventive and obsessive and well-written than 96% of any books I've ever read. So, you know, check yourself at the door. And Greg is shaking his head, but Greg, read it.
I did not shake my head at all. I was just
you
saying,
looked a little
like,
suspicious. But it's like no. he honestly is an incredible writer, and I think it was a huge notebook dump. If you're into it, I would read it now.
I was saying ooh at the turn because I got that you were annoyed with people criticizing you for talking about it, but then you just flipped it on the whole novelist industry.
Right.
Rick's
take out the novels.
Watch out.
All right, we'll be back on Friday and then two more shows next week. Thank you to everybody for listening, and remember, always heed the call. Eric, it was so funny. Eric, I was just about to type to you to hit the music. Like at that very moment.
This time.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.